Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is Stephen Zimmer broadcasting to you from the heart of Lexington, Kentucky. And this is episode number 172. And I'm joined tonight by my co-hosts, Holly Phillippe and Daniel Dark. How are you doing? Let's get the interview going.
Hello.
All right. And tonight
there's a little bit of darkness going on in the dark world down here, but you know it's going to be brightened up after a while with lightning bolts, so it doesn't matter.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you're going to send more of that crap our way, aren't you?
I'm getting ready to.
We already have the man behind the tornadoes of the West, Tommy B. Smith, in the chat room already, so that's a bonus. We're already off to a great start.
Tommy's in the house. All right.
Yeah, Tommy is in the house. And,
I'm trying to get over there.
And definitely want to say welcome to we have a lot of listeners from around the world lately. I've been noticing our listenership is growing on the map. And thank you very much for tuning in from wherever you are in the world. And, of course, this is a show by creatives for creatives. And we track our own Imaginarium convention, our own paths as creatives. Daniel's, of course, a writer, and I'm a writer, and Mars also Michael West, who is on a little bit of a hiatus at the moment, but will be returning very soon, I believe. And of course, the awesome Holly Phillippe, who is all kinds
the
of
backbone of the whole thing.
The biggin.
She keeps us all congealed.
This is true.
So, yeah, we love to give spotlights to talented creatives, and that is definitely going to happen tonight. We'd like to have, if you look at our archive, we've had all kinds of folks, authors, gamers, filmmakers, artists, musicians, and it's a celebration of the creative world. And hopefully you get some cool information as well as have fun while you're listening to the show. The chat room's already taking off. We have Thomas Moore in early today, and with Thomas and Tommy B. Smith, it's already off to a good start. So
TT Brigade.
Yeah. Oh, this is fantastic. But I do have a cool announcement, Mr. Dark, and you may not have caught it because it just went live right before the show, but we are very excited to announce tonight that the Louisville anime community will be joining us at Imaginarium this year. So, Holly, you want to give a few words on that? Because Holly was working very hard with them to get that set up.
Yes, they're going to be working with the gaming directors. They'll be doing some gaming in there pertaining to anime. Also going to do a film. They're going to work with the film directors, which I have to arrange yet. Probably going to be on a Friday late afternoon or late evening. They're going to do some anime things with them and actually show some anime parody videos. Well, that's going to be a lot of fun. The cosplayers are going to love that. I will love it. I mean, yeah, it's going to be exciting. And they're also going to run some panels pertaining to writing and, how that ties in with the whole anime genre. So it's going to be very interesting. They're going to tie into to everything Imaginarium is. And it's going to be very exciting. They do a lot for charities. They do, And they'll have some other things going around. We're going to have a table for them so you can stop and, chat with them and ask them questions. And and look what they have to offer and, you know, see a little bit what all they do for the community. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it is going to be really exciting because anime is a very interesting, very beloved, very popular kind of world. And for a lot of people, you know, there still are a lot of people for whom, you know, it's a new one, you know, that they don't know a lot about yet or haven't explored. And it's going to be really cool because the Louisville anime community is going to, you know, just fit in. They're going to kind of like, you know, fit right into every sector of the convention. I mean, you're going to see anime content now on, like Holly said, in the expo hall. You're going to see it in the, you know, the gaming room, the film festival, the main programming. I mean, and they're just a super cool organization, and they do all ages. I mean, they're for all ages, and, you know, they do a lot of events and activities throughout the Louisville region, and, you know, very, very, very loved group up there. So, yeah, it's going to be really cool to have them aboard. Can't wait.
One
yeah,
thing I've
fun.
Noticed that's cool about the anime is the fact that there's so many different characters that are in there.
Oh, God.
You know, you
yeah,
think,
I mean,
you think
it covers all kinds of stuff.
Comic, you know, the Comic-Con and the, you know, cosplay and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anime, like, they're similar, but they're all different stories and everything. And
yep.
There's so many more that they keep up with. That I
mm-hmm.
see more of them every day on the net. Just so there, you know, this costume. I'm like, who are these people?
I know. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Well, all the great anime stories that are out there now, the shows. I mean, it's crazy. I watch Castlevania, but that's, of course, it's a vampire, so of course I watch that. But there are so many. There's Ruby. There's, you know, I mean, it just goes on and on. Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, one of my favorites, you know, Dark Overlord, you know.
We'll have to do one about the Dark One. But, yeah, even on Netflix. Yeah. I mean, Netflix is loaded with great anime shows. And it's a whole different group of people. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people. And it's something for everybody. There's romance. There's intrigue. There's mystery. There's, you know, blood and gore part of it. There's the sexual aspect. I mean, there's just something for everybody. There really is. So I'm excited
right.
to see, you know, what all they bring to the table. I really am.
Yeah, it's going to
be
a really cool integration, and they're going to fit in great.
It's going to be a different year. That's,
yeah, the new cosplay groups that we've announced recently. I mean, that's you know, there is a big cosplay element to this group, and so they're going to be fitting right in with all those others that we've announced recently. And it's I think it's going to make the environment that much more fun because, I mean, obviously we have you know, tremendous amount of programming and. All, more content than you'll find at any major writers conference or something like that. But you know, in addition to, you know, outside of that, you know, we want it to be enjoyable too, and that's where I think this is going to be, you know, definitely take it up another notch.
And it's going to, you know, the traffic and the whole atmosphere of the expo hall is going to be totally different because, you know, there's going to be a lot more action. A lot more stuff going on, you know, and a lot more foot traffic. It's just going to be a different experience. It really is. I think everybody is going to love it and just have a blast. I really do. And they're going to learn. They're going to learn a lot with the anime and the cosplayers.
Right.
Well, this year,
right.
Holly, you brought so much new blood into the Imaginarium that. I can't believe how many new people that you've brought in this year on you know, from just last year.
Right.
Know, just
yeah, it's a goal that we set out to do. So that's the one area.
And
that,
we ain't done.
You know,
we ain't done.
We really took a big step forward with film last year, and we had, of course, we've you know been known as having
crazy.
A strong you know writers author presence, and yeah, just a couple other areas we really wanted to see take a step up, and that's where this came in.
Right. That is very true. Very true. It is going to be a lot different, and I'm getting
somebody's
feedback
got a,
from
a
something.
Radio on there,
yeah.
or a phone, or something in the background.
Yeah, it's
there.
Like
feedback on it.
feedback in the background there.
All right. Well,
I might have to
just whatever you got the show on. You're gonna have to turn it down.
There you go.
We don't want to drive Tommy B. Smith and Mr. Moore nuts there. They're listening along.
Poor old Tommy B.
Oh man.
But yeah, it's gonna be a different atmosphere and a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Well, you'll have the Imaginarium atmosphere. I mean, it'll still be the positive atmosphere that you've known in the past. Just
yep.
Just a you know,
more positive,
a bigger,
more active,
even more dynamic version. So it's
yep.
It'll be a lot of fun.
It's
and,
what we
the,
you know want it, and well, and it's what Stephen's seen from the whole beginning. You know, he wanted it to get around the whole aspect of the creative writing. And yes, we start with that core.
Yeah, all
but
forms
the,
and types, yeah.
All forms, all types, all genres, mm-hmm. and it branches out. And we have done that. We have finally reached that point where, you know, we have branched out and can actually flourish and show, you know, the roots of the creative writing, how it spreads throughout all genres and all the way to cosplay and all the way to anime. Somebody's got to write the stories, people.
Right. That's true. And storytelling, you know, storytelling is done through music. It's done through film. It's done through, I mean,
same.
Yes, the storytelling methods are many now. And it's
yep.
wonderful to be able to embrace that and make that the focus. It's not about, you know, like I've always said, it's not about standing in line for 5 hours to pay
right.
$150 for a 5 second photo op. This is about
right.
you know, total immersion experience, you know, celebrating the things you love and, you know, really interacting with the you know, kind of guests we have, where you actually do get to meet them, do get to talk to them, do get to spend time with them. And
With no extra fees.
Yeah.
You don't
that's
have to pay an extra fee to be rushed through like cattle, you know, to
yeah,
see an
right.
actor you might see on TV for 10 minutes, you know,
yeah, no,
come on.
No crazy VIP fee to, you know, get rushed through for 3 seconds. So, yes, this is this is much more than that. So
it's like one of the events that I was at and everything. I don't know how much the guy was actually charging, but there was a line
yeah.
you know, way back. That these people, you know, were willing to pay to have a picture
oh, yeah.
taken with this guy or whatever
yeah.
signed.
Oh,
and,
insane.
You know, you're just sitting there thinking, you know, that person, because it was at least $30, the lowest price that I saw was $30.
Mm. Oh, they go up to like $150. Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on who it is. Yeah, it's insane. I don't
and
get it.
Yeah. Like, you know, okay, you know, but, you know, if that's how you want to spend your money, but, you know, I would rather spend my money, you know, personally. I'm not a big, you know, this person puts on their pants the same way I do type of thing.
Right. That's
right.
exactly right. Yeah.
For being
and,
able to have
know,
enough money to buy Thomas Moore a good drink. You know, having
that's right.
That's when it's really fun.
Yeah, you know, or, you know, I'd rather spend my money with a creative that's actually sitting there, you know, doing something today, and you know, without my purchase, they may not make their table fee, or they may not make you know, their motel fee or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without us being able to support each other that way, and mm-hmm. and they've got good stuff. You know, why
right.
not? You know, why not support these little guys? You know, the ones that are sitting there that have been out there for years and have
they
made
already got
millions,
the money. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Why? You know, why am I giving them? You know, say $30 to $150 just to say,
mm-hmm.
hi, how you doing?
Yeah. Right. Snap.
Right.
Let's go.
Right.
Most of them that I want to, you know, meet and everything like that, they're nice enough to meet me anyway.
Right.
Right.
You
that's
know,
true.
Without paying. You know, so.
Right. Right.
Very cool. Well, I'll tell
that's
you
true.
What.
So that,
we
you
are
know,
gonna,
that,
we gotta
that's
get
one
our,
of the reasons that we don't have, you know, those superstar people,
well,
you know, coming
yeah.
to our events.
Right.
To
well, they're all,
because,
right.
because, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I could get that, but, you know, again, yeah. you know, I have to offer him $5,000 at least, you know. Then we have to charge, you know, the 50 to 100 a head to register like cattle. That's how it works.
Yeah. It's not just that, but then, you know, if you're having, say you've got, you know, you've got five guys there at $5,000 a person. That's $25,000 that we have to cover in Imaginarium.
Yeah.
Where do you think that coverage is going to come from? It's going to come from the ticket sales.
That's it.
Well,
and
what
happened to the ticket sales all of a sudden? They just, you know, instead of being a reasonable ticket sale that, you know, you can spend the whole weekend and immerse yourself in knowledge, it became a ticket sale that, you know, you can't do anything
else. It's unattainable. It's unattainable to a lot of people. That's exactly it. That's why we wanted to stay away from that.
Or if Eric Jude divulges the location of his gold stash, we can figure it out that way. But now moving on, we've got to get to our sponsor of the evening. And tonight's sponsor is the awesome Sandy Lender, who is a fantastic author. And here's a little bit about Sandy. Fantasy author Sandy Lender has stories for everyone, especially for readers who like dragons. Realms of Fantasy magazine positively reviewed her dragon-packed novel, Choices Meant for Kings, upon its release. The TimelessTeens.com went nuts for the critters in her Dragons in Space series. She's got 10 books available on Amazon so far, and she's not stopping. Check out the author page for Sandy Lender on Amazon.com to pick up a new favorite story. And thank you, Sandy. You're awesome, and I highly recommend her. I definitely have read her work and can definitely vouch for it. Good stuff. And, yeah, we went a minute or two past our mark for our guest has been patiently waiting online for a minute or two, so we're going to go right to the announcement. And tonight's guest I'm very excited about, award-winning filmmaker, award-winning photographer, who has a tremendous story to tell. And he, like I said, very, very loved around the state of Kentucky. And recently, actually, he had a feature film called One Must Fall and sold out the Mighty Palace Theater in Louisville, Kentucky for the premiere. So that on that note, I'm going to bring in the one, the only, Antonio Pantoja. There he is. I think.
Thank you so much. You got the pronunciation. You got the pronunciation right. Spoken like a true Hispanic.
Thank you, man. Thank you very, very much.
I can say I helped out with that. I helped out. I actually looked it up to make sure.
So thank you guys so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Good to have you on here.
Thanks for joining us.
Steven's been telling me good things about you, but, you know, I want to hear it from the person that's actually doing the good things. You know.
Yes,
that's
all
right.
Our listeners around the world are wanting to hear from him as well. So I figured, definitely.
I probably won't live up to any of that.
Yes, you will.
But yeah, like I told you, you know, we're just laid back and we're going to have fun tonight and converse. We do take questions and comments sometime from the chat room. And got a couple, great filmmaker hanging out in there right now, Thomas Moore. So I'm sure he'll pipe in with some stuff. And Tommy B. Smith, great author. So got some good folks already in the chat room. But let's start with, like I said, you know, you have a feature film that, you know, premiered and sold out the Palace Theater, which is no small feat, and that's a gorgeous theater. And I wanted to, because we made a beautiful video of that night, kind of like a little overview video. What was that like for you? I mean, like I said, the experience. Take us back a little and tell us about the film too, of course.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for asking. So I've been working on doing a premiere here for a long time, and I didn't know if I wanted to do like a really small theater that had like 100 people in it, you know, like 100 person capacity or something like that. But I knew that I would regret it that if I didn't do like a much larger theater, one with better acoustics and, you know, a good screen and things like that. And I really wanted to do like a whole presentation. And a friend of mine, he owns LouisvilleHalloween.com and Danger Run. And he does really amazing staging, and he did it for the movie as well. He was art director on the movie. So he's like, man, let's just do it big, you know, let's try to do as big as possible And I said, there's no way we're going to fill the palace. I mean, there's just no way. So he's like, man, I think that, you know, we have a chance. If we do a really good presentation and make it a whole event, then not just the screening, then I think we can do it. So a bunch of people told me that as well. My mentor, Lee Kuyper and Dorian Washington, those guys told me. And they gambled on me, and they were like, just do it. And I did, and we did really, really well, and we had a lot of people come out. I was so thankful for it. And it was a big presentation. We had they made like sets built from the movie. So movie sets that we had, like using the props that we had in the movie, and then they built a bunch of sets inside the palace.
Very cool.
A bunch of different photo opportunities and crazy different things. And we had liquor sponsors and giving out like free liquor and stuff like that. And we had VIP packages with plenty of food and stuff available. So it was a really, really different experience outside of the movie itself. It was like a big networking opportunity for, you know, actors and people who are interested, who have interest in the industry itself.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Wow. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, that's
so.
That is the way.
So, how did you put out the word that you're having such an event?
That's a great question. So, I didn't spend a dollar on advertising. All I did is just exhaust my network. So, and I use social media a lot. I mean, every day. I mean, we all do. I think, you know, to some degree.
Yeah.
But you know, like there was a, I wanted to do something really cool for Louisville because we have played everywhere else but here so far at that time. And I was like, man, you know, I know a bunch of people here want to see it, and they've traveled all over from here to see it. So we've had people go to Michigan and St. Louis and Cincinnati and Indianapolis and just all over but Louisville. So I think that, you know, even though we did have like, we had like, you know, a few hundred people out at those events, but I knew that here locally that they would want to, you know, that they would want to come out and see it too. And in a really good presentation, because we were going to, it was just focused on the movie. And we have like, the movie's about crime scene cleanup guys. So there's like 10 people walking around hazmat suits with body parts. And, you know, there's like a degloving of the face in the movie. And like that person's walking around. I mean, not really the same makeup from the movie, but like that, we still had somebody walking around.
Very
to represent
cool.
that person.
That's neat.
Yeah, and the movie is right in your wheelhouse. I mean, it's I have the sense that you have a real passion for the horror genre and with filmmaking too. And so for you, I mean, this is a chance to really immerse in your wheelhouse and really make it come alive, right?
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, so like I think that, you know, if a lot of people will do movies just because that they think everybody will think it's cool or something, or like they'll study on a specific niche that they think is popular or will earn them money. But I think if you don't do something that you're truly passionate about, then that will definitely show through. And all that research that people have to do, like, I mean, that's just like, if you did a movie on something that you love, then it's going to be genuine and you're going to do it with passion. And you don't have to go back and do all that research because you've lived it your whole life. So I grew up on 80s cinema and like literally was raised by the television on the morals from, you know, 80s film. And I feel like those films, you were learning something, even though you didn't know you were learning a lesson. Those films were teaching you something, you know, like you'd be watching Labyrinth with David Bowie. And you think you're watching this movie about these beautiful puppets and this amazing music and all this crazy scenery, which is a visual masterpiece. But also you're learning that, you know, materialistic items are trivial, and that you may take things for granted, and you shouldn't take things for granted. And you're learning these valuable lessons through those movies. So I was raised on that type of cinema, and I feel like it was a really good opportunity to do that with our film as well, to teach some things and break stereotypes as well.
Well, I think that era of film has definitely got a certain resonance today, and you know, connects with people. I mean, you can see it even in like the TV shows like Stranger Things, that the 80s vibe. I mean, it really connects, and that's a really, really cool to hear that was part of your own foundation, you know, in terms of you know, coming up and what kind of things you got into growing up. That's awesome.
Absolutely. I came from a broken home.
The 80s
and
myself.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
the 80s.
I came from a bit of a broken home, so I was honestly I was literally raised by the television because I learned everything from TV, and I got all those messages. Luckily, you know, because I think that there was a lot of those films always taught you something, and luckily I was able to identify what they were teaching me.
Well, you, I mean, after we started talking to you, and after you had come aboard like an Imaginarium convention as a guest and all. I had finally had the opportunity to discover this Voice Tribune article about you, and it was just an amazing story, and I think everybody should look that up. It's the Voice Tribune, and it's an amazing article, and I just have to make sure I get the title of it right, because it's called Through a Lens Brightly. And that does tell
us,
you mentioned briefly about your home life, and I think it's good for people to know that, you know, at the age of, I believe it was 14, I mean, you were on your own for a while, and in a really difficult situation, and you could have gone two different directions, and I think I'd like to hear you briefly talk about that period and how you, you know, chose the self-empowerment, you know, path that you have, and how, you know, you climbed, you know, out of that difficult situation.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really long time ago, but and I think that I'm glad that lesson came for me early, because it really makes you value things, you know, much later in life, and then you always know that you can be back there. But yeah, I was homeless, and I lived in my car from 14 till about 16 and a half, probably, maybe, I don't know, in that time frame. I don't even recall how long it was, but to be honest, I was still working and stuff. I was just living in my car, and I'd like take showers at friends' houses, or sometimes they let me couch surf, but most of the time I was sleeping in my car, and I honestly didn't mind it that much. I was like, if this is as bad as it gets, this is not that bad. I always said that to myself, and it wasn't, you know, but like most of my friends were in high school and stuff, and I wasn't. So there were times where like I would be parked in my car and ready to go to sleep, and I had to get up for work really early in the morning. I worked at this bagel place. It was called Dooley's Bagel, and I drove there illegally. I got to like deliver there, and like I didn't even have my license, but I had to go to sleep really early because there was like a bagel place, so they operated mostly in the morning, like really early in the morning. You had to get up, and like they had like a baker that went there and stuff, and they got there at like 4 a.m. so I had to be there early. So basically I remember like a few times where like kids were walking behind my car or whatever, and like these kids would be like dressed beautifully, and they'd be going to parties or something like that, and then I would just think to myself like how differently our lives were, that like, you know, these guys are, they're going to these parties and stuff, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll wonder what they're going to eat. And for me, like, I wonder, like, if I will eat at all, you know, and like, that's just, that was our difference. And, I remember I was like really malnourished, and anybody can vouch for this. When I was, about that age, I was like 100 pounds, and everyone made fun of me, because I was just super malnourished, because I really just didn't eat properly, because I just didn't have money, and I was homeless. But, anybody who grew up with me will say the same thing, but I thought that was really funny. So if you see any pictures from me that are really aged, you'll see it. So like I said, I just came from a really broken home, and I didn't want to leave home, but it just worked out that way, and I found my own way, and I'm so thankful that I did. And it just makes me value, everything even more, you know, even like parenthood. It makes me value that, you know, 100 times more. But, you know, it's just, I think sometimes addiction in homes can really affect people, and it can take away a child's purity, and it can make you grow up a lot quicker than you want to. But it's, I think in the end, it's a gift.
Well, I think in your case, I mean, you have made right choices, and it shows that, you know, no matter what, I think you're very inspirational, because it shows that no matter what your circumstance is, you still can make right choices, you know, even if you're surrounded by the bad roads and things that can take you down a bad path.
You.
I mean, and you found your talent and you pursued it. And that's a theme that we encourage on the show here with all the creatives that listen, that we interview, and, you know, something that's, if, you know, you go after it and go after it with a vengeance. And that's what you've done. And you know, your photography, I mean, that's, you know, we'll segue into that just a little bit here, but I mean, in addition to being a filmmaker, I mean, you were known for, you know, being a great art photographer, and your wedding photography is just, I mean, wow. I mean, those couples are fortunate to have you do their weddings. So when I marry Holly in about 100, Holly and I finally get married in 100 years, hopefully we'll be able to figure something out.
Steven, you've only got a couple of more years and everything, then you'll actually be married.
Right. We're in Kentucky, though. So, yeah, they will declare us.
That's right. We're gonna hit that ball.
Right. But But the photography, I think, you know, like I said, that gave you a path to, you know, start making an income. And you've built quite, you know, you've shown a good business mind in building up that side of you. And that's, you know, I know that's also part of your path as well. And
thank you so much.
Comment a little bit about the photography side and building your business.
Yeah, I really love photography. So I just don't get to do it very often. But just a few days ago, I got to shoot with Frances Lewis. She's Frankie Lewis on Project Runway. But I've known her a long, long time, and she's very, very talented. And we got to do a little project the other day, and I sent you guys like a sneak peek photo, but not the full thing. And she'll kill me if she knows that I did that. I think we're shooting for a cover soon, I believe. But you guys saw like I dug the hole and stuff like that, because I love like getting my hands dirty with these shoots and things. But I feel like
literally,
you know, when you're doing these. Yeah. So you're doing this photography. Your imagination is the only thing that separates you from somebody else. So if somebody else can go and buy your gear and they can be you, then that's not a good thing. You have a big problem on your hands. You have to have imagination for this, you know, and I feel like it's a full contact sport. Also, you have to have imagination for it or else you're no different than anybody else. And I think
that a lot
of people blame their gear. Yeah, they blame their gear, and they're like, well, surely if I had the best camera, then I could do that or this or whatever. But in reality, like, Jimi Hendrix could pick up your guitar, and he's still Jimi Hendrix. You know, it's not going to be any different. And I think that people need to that needs to resonate with people where, you know, they really need to focus on their imagination and not the gear so much, because some of the best guys can just pick up any camera and do whatever. But I just try to you know, my photos, yeah. Try to make them tell like a big story and stuff like that. And when I first started doing it, I didn't think it would resonate with anybody. And then I was just doing this, and I would post it, and it would go to thin air. But I would, they're very personal to me as far as like the stories that are involved in it and stuff. They're very ethereal and fantasy and stuff. But I figured that no one would be able to, you know, relate. But once I put it out into the world, people were like, oh my God, I relate to this story so much in this image. And then it made me think that, you know, like when you create art, it's very selfish to you. You're very selfish about it because it's about you or an experience. But then you put it out into the world and it no longer belongs to you. Like Adele, she'll make a song about a bad breakup. It's about her breakup. And then it'll go out to the world and there's millions of people singing the song and they're thinking, this is me. And I think that's the way that art works, you know, is people take it and they make it their own. Whatever that may be, because it resonates with them. But I think it all has to come from imagination and personal experience.
That's so cool you mentioned that, because I noticed that myself. It's like when you put something of an artistic nature, set it free, so to speak, in the world, yeah, people do make it their own, and they view it as such. And, yeah, then often could take it very seriously.
And it's scary.
So,
you know, it's scary for the creators. You know, it's always scary, no matter what your art medium is. It's scary because, you know, like I've said before, it's part of your soul. It's your baby. It's who you are, and, you know, but you want to share it with others and you want to let it loose, but you're always scared of, oh, will they really get it? Will they understand it? But there's always those few that do, you know, and that's what makes it all worthwhile.
And sometimes,
I agree.
Sometimes that when you set something free, people will see things in there that when you were creating it, you didn't necessarily consciously see it yourself.
See it.
You weave things into your work that I guess on a subconscious level that get revealed later by your you know, fans, readers, viewers, whatever it may be. But I mean, I'm sure that may have happened to you too with your feature film.
Oh yeah. And you know, sometimes it does get a little scary where you feel like you're just catering to the fans, but you just have to stay true to, you know, your artistic integrity and do what you want to do, you know, while still remaining true to yourself. But yeah, same thing happens to the movie as well. And there aren't many people who like understand the parallels in the movie. I cover some pretty dark topics, obviously, but I wrote it as well. But it's like the first time I've ever wrote a script really. But so I wrote the film. And I really wanted there to be like parallels between like the real world where like we don't look as like a predatorial like chauvinistic boss as a predator, but it really is. We look at it as comedic, but and that's what happens in the real world. And then there's the killer's world in my film, and it's very dark, and the colors are different, and it's not light and airy, and it's very serious, and it's also a predator that people take seriously. But I wanted to show the parallels between the two and how one, we just we see it every single day, and it happens right in front of our face, and we don't even take it seriously. We look at it as comedy, and I hope that people get that from the film, though. But yeah. So I think that, you know, with that, and we've had some reviews that come out, and they totally get it. So I hope that people do, and it resonates with them.
Very cool. And so how was it? I'm just going to ask you about your trip through the screenwriting process, because we do have a lot of writers that listen to the show and a lot of authors that sometimes make their first attempts to screenwrite and vice versa sometimes. So tell us, you know, how was the writing process for you? Any hurdles? Did you just go smoothly? How'd it go?
Yeah, it's very difficult, but it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life, and I always tell everybody that. So anybody who's listening to the show, I'll make a million-dollar bet that you're better than I am. But I'll tell you this, though. So it's really, really hard, and I wrote it in a week. So my wife took the kids to Florida, and then she was like, yeah, you got 1 week to write this thing. You know, we're going to leave the house, and then you can focus, because I couldn't focus and you know, like, drop everything out of my mind to clear my mind and make the film or write the film. So I did. Mm-hmm. I knew I had a time limit on it, and then I wrote it in a week. But people were like, they're like, man, Antonio, I can't believe you wrote the film in a week. I said, I didn't write it in a week. I wrote the film for my entire life. I just typed it in a week, mm-hmm. because I've lived this my whole life, and these are all my life experiences on the same page. But for the next one, I'm actually writing it next week, and I'm gonna go to Tennessee in the woods, and basically, if it's okay, can I tell you? I haven't told anybody about it really yet. Is it okay if I tell you guys?
Oh, yes, please do.
Sure.
Please share.
So the film is about an 11-year-old girl who's disabled because she lost her parents in a car accident. So they died, but she didn't. So she's left handicapped, and she has to go into foster care, and she's abused there, which happens in foster homes and foster care, foster families, and then she goes to school, and she's bullied there pretty profusely. So she wishes for a monster to come and exact revenge on her enemies, and it does. But I knew that the monster was going to have to be really, really important for this film. So so I reached out to Sonny Garasamowicz, who did Where the Wild Things Are. And I said, I won't make the film unless you'll make it with me. And he agreed, and he really liked the concept and stuff. And we've been working on it for the better part of 3 months now. So I'm going to Tennessee, and I'm going to write the film in complete isolation. And this time I'm going to take a different path. So I'm going to go out to the woods, and I'll have a flashlight in my pocket, but I won't use it unless I need it. And I want to write the film while I'm really scared out there, you know, like, because I can write it like through the eyes of a child if I do it that way. I'm going to try some different practices for this one and see if I can, if it makes a difference, you know, because I feel like if I approach it in that way, then it's going to come across that way 100%. But I could be wrong, but I'm going to try it. So it's going to be next week. I'll write the film.
Very cool.
Do you know where you're going in Tennessee?
I'm sorry.
Do you know where you're going in Tennessee?
Yeah. Well, I looked at some some little chalets in Gatlinburg, and I want to be away from civilization, off grid, but I kind of still need to pull up internet and research and stuff like that, and be able to go get food when I need it and things like that. So probably Gatlinburg, because it's got a happy medium that I can still have internet access and I can get food when it's readily available and stuff.
Okay.
Well, if you run into a strange guy with a top hat and a fun mustache, that's Daniel Dark. So you don't have to worry about it.
That's right. Yeah. Don't let him. Well, you know what, Daniel? You go out in the woods with him, and that's enough to scare anybody. See, a dark night, Daniel walks in the woods with his top hat and Jack the Ripper, you know, attitude and outfit. But yeah, that's enough to scare anybody.
Hey, Antonio. Good news.
I know nothing of what you speak.
Gatlinburg is 30 minutes from where Thomas More lives. So if you get in trouble, you just give Thomas a call.
Well, Thomas says, does he know this is the South, right? Banjos. He's like, does he have a loaded gun? And he says, this boy is brave.
I'm going to give it a shot. I saw a movie called Backcountry recently, and it's an amazing movie. It's on Netflix, but a guy that we know of made it, and I just saw it for like the first time last month, and it's about these people who get mauled by a bear because it happens so often to like campers and stuff like that. That like they're just running wild all the time, so like you could get mauled by a bear, and I totally could too. But I'll pray to God, Buddha, Allah, and a plastic idol just to make sure I'm safe.
There you go. You better cover all the ground. That's right.
Yes. Yeah. We want to see you in October. So yeah, please do stay safe.
Well, Thomas Moore has offered. I was going to say, Thomas Moore has offered. He said he's close enough. If you need anything, company, food, or anything, he can be there in 30 minutes. He's only 30 minutes from Gatlinburg.
Yep.
Oh, man. Thank you.
And he'll be at Imaginarium. He'll be at Imaginarium
next year. Yeah, he's going to L.A. next year, so we're going to try to find a way to get him back in 2020. But he is going to make this Imaginarium, so that's good news. And he will be there during your woodland sabbatical. So if you do need somebody, he is volunteering from the chat room here. So that's cool.
Thank you so much. So kind of you.
Thank you, Thomas. But that sounds awesome. I mean, just in a way that almost
like that.
Sounds like you're doing the writing what a method actor almost would do. that is a really cool kind of approach. I mean, I haven't heard a lot of that. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
That is awesome.
No, a screenwriter.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Well, I live in this house that was I don't even know if I should say it in here because I'm in my house now. But it was owned by a church that like is now across the street or whatever. But the church owned my house, and 9 nuns used to live here. And like we saw something in the house, and I got some like lady who like some Reiki lady to come through and like cleanse the house. And like I had never seen or heard nothing in it since. But she was like, "Yo, don't ever write any of that stuff in here ever again. Don't do that. Don't bring any negative energy into this house." And she told me like straight up, she's like, "Do not write in this house anymore." So I was like, "All right, so say no more," and I never did again. So, but yeah, I think that kind of pushed me out of it.
Well, yeah, I can't wait to see what you come up with.
Burn a lot of sage.
Awesome.
Yeah, burn a lot of sage.
Yeah. Burn a lot of sage. That's right.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. You keep a very busy schedule. I mean, you're always just looking in on, you know, you're always up to something. So, you keep very active. I mean, all the different stuff that
you
do. Now you're just so I'm clear so the audience knows. Yeah, you are making your full time living now as a creative, like filmmaking, photography, et cetera.
Yeah. I think about 5 years ago now I quit WDRB. I was the creative director there, but I really loved my job. But I knew that like I was doing this on the side, and it was becoming. I knew that my time was very important, and I wasn't seeing my kids ever. And a lot of people called me stupid for quitting that job because I have no education whatsoever. I didn't make it to school past the 8th grade. So everybody's like, "You're an idiot for quitting that job." But I wanted to chase, you know, my passion, and I'm very lucky that I did. But I didn't care. I don't care about money really. But I'm really lazy too. So like, I work really hard just so I can be lazy for a really long time. So I'll work really hard for like 8 months straight without a day off, not a single day off, just so I can take like a couple months off. But I'm so lazy. I just love being lazy, and I'll work hard just to be lazy.
Well, I think it's great because, I mean, this day and age, there's a lot of people that pursue the college degree and end up with a degree they can't use, and they're saddled with immense debt, and there you go. And then you simply, you know, pursue your passion, and you're on your way. So, I mean, yeah, nobody could take that away. I mean, that is, I think, often the right choice to make, you know, when you have a clear vision.
Off,
like you
know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's a good thing to go for it sometimes. And before I ask too many questions here, Daniel, Holly, do you guys have anything you want to ask right now?
One of the things that I'm just curious about, when you said you were 14 when you left home, how did you make it at 14? I know that's in the movie and the story and everything, but you know, I just I know what I was doing at 14 years of age. I didn't leave home until I was 17, you know, because I was still in school and working and all that stuff when I was 14. But, you know, I can't imagine being out of the house totally at 14 years of age.
I know. It's so I had a car illegally at this time. It wasn't in my name, but I had a car, luckily. I think that was kind of my saving grace, but I'll kind of spare you the details of like, well, I don't want to call out any parents or anything like that, but there was drug addiction in the home, and I left there on really bad terms, and I left with just the clothes on my back, and I had some stuff in my car, and that was pretty much it. But I worked at a place called Dooley's Bagel, and mm-hmm. I was there when I was 14, and they didn't know how old I was, but they knew I had a car, so they probably like figured, you know, he could probably deliver. Surely he's got a driver's license. You know, everything's all good. And it wasn't. So, this was like before GPS.
At least, okay.
Yeah. So this was like before GPS and stuff too. So I like, I'm like geographically like an idiot. But like, so I just basically delivered for them when I was, until I was about 16, I think, maybe 16 and a half ish. And then I worked like other random jobs, but anybody who would hire me at that time. And then all my friends went to school, but then I got an apartment with my friend Josh Torpy. He was a little bit older than me, so he was 18, and I think I was like 16, maybe 16 and a half or something. And then we got it like this tiny apartment together, and he had the bedroom. And I'm talking like the apartment was so small that the kitchen was so tiny that you couldn't fully open up the refrigerator door without it hitting like the opposite side of the counter, if that makes sense. Couldn't fully open the stove in this place. It was so tiny. Tiny. Like, it was so tiny. But we had that.
Like
and
a
then,
Japanese
kitchen. Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we had mm-hmm. just like a bunch of friends always come and like stay the night and stuff like that and like buy food and just, you know, whatever. But I always had a job always throughout, you know, like my being homeless and being in a bad situation. I had always worked. So it's kind of like it's all I know, really. But so yeah, I think that you know, just lucky, I guess, more than anything. But I was never without work until I was about like, I don't know. I joined the military, I think, when I was 20, maybe 21-ish,
yeah,
something like that. So I've always done something off the wall.
Yeah, I saw that.
Wow, I didn't know you were in the military. Wow.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah.
We love our veterans here, and so yeah, definitely
yeah.
very
cool.
So
me being an Army brat, I have to ask, what branch were you in?
It was the Army National Guard, and it was just a brief stint. So
yay!
But I mean, I loved it. I remember like when I first got in, and we were like singing cadence and stuff like that. I was like, oh my god, I'm really in here. This is real. You know, I had already sworn in and stuff, and it was just completely crazy. But really lucky, you know, to, I had a bunch of really, really good friends in there and stuff like that, that we,
mm-hmm.
we continue. Well, I mean, we still talk today, but
oh, yeah,
we worked on a bunch of, yeah, yeah. And like when you're in the guard, mm-hmm. since it's not like completely active and full time and stuff like that, then there's
mm-hmm.
a bunch of, you know, like you guys get together after that. So we all worked at cell phone company together. Most of us, like all the people in my unit had worked together.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really cool. And it really was a camaraderie, but super cool. I love all those guys.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
Tommy's
awesome.
Tommy Smith had to say bye. He's in the chat room there, but that's why I had his name on my brain there. But Holly's father was a drill sergeant, so that's the reference there.
Yes,
yeah, he was an Army drill sergeant.
I'm a daughter of a drill sergeant.
Yeah.
My TV.
You know what's funny is one of my best buddies. He was a recruiter, Dennis Smith, Sergeant Smith in the Army, but he was like really good at singing cadence, and he could definitely be a drill sergeant and stuff like that. And he was so scary. Like when I first got in there, I was scared to death of him. And he ended up being one of the most kind, genuine, sweetheart
yeah.
human beings on the face of the earth. And he was totally like the drill sergeant. Like he was a drill sergeant. So like, but I mean, they can turn it on and turn it right back off. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. My dad's quiet. And one of the nicest people ever. My mom's meaner in hell. But Dad, he's really quiet and sweet, and you'd never guess, you know, that he was a drill sergeant. But they said, yeah, he was, you know, he was really hard on them when they was in the reserves, the ones that I've talked to. But yeah, it's funny. I've just never seen him in that mode. I mean, he was always really sweet to me. You know, I've never
yeah.
seen him
oh, yeah.
like that. But yeah, it's neat how they turn that on and off like that. But the military teaches you a lot of things. It teaches you, you know, self-respect for one thing, and respect for other people. That's a big one. That's you're not just thinking of you. You're thinking of everyone else. You're a team. And I think that's wonderful when you carry that outside of there, because then you have a bigger picture to look at. You know, you actually care about those around you.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great way to put it. You know, and I never thought about like how that spilled over into my life with video and photos and like running teams and things like that. But you know, you're totally right, and I never thought about that. And honestly, I wish I would have been in a lot longer, because I wasn't in long at all. But I really wish I would have. I wish I was still in, to be honest with you. Sometimes I think about it all the time. But yeah, you're totally right. Like you do, and like this video and photography is totally a team sport. I mean, it's a team effort.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, like we have. Like sometimes we have 40 people on set, you know, like for photos or video, which is crazy, but that's the reality of it. And yeah, it's every person has to be strong on the entire team, or else it just won't work.
Yeah, I think it may have also helped because I noticed that. I mean, you are so supportive of other filmmakers, and you view it in the way I view it, as a community rather than a territorial competition thing. And I see that in you. I mean, with the way you are with other filmmakers, and in Louisville, you know, the Louisville area has some amazing people. I mean, just to name a few, I mean, Austin Sheehan, Josiah Stendell, I mean, Sylvia Wolf Bush. I mean, I can go on and on about, you know, there's a lot of really good filmmakers there, I would say some of your military background may even have helped you, you know, view that, definitely we're all in this together kind of vibe that really drives you to, you know, be so supportive of other filmmakers, you know, as you are.
Oh, thank you. I never really thought about it. I mean, like I said, it wasn't in very long, but yeah. So totally.
Yeah.
And I think it should be like that. And I mean, I love all those guys, and I always preach it. So I got to speak at the University of Kentucky the other day, and they were like, hey, you're going to speak in front of the entire art school. And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? You know, that's pretty scary, you know, for me. And so it's all of it's like architects and painters and musicians, and they're not just photographers and video guys. So I try to make it general enough to you know, appeal to anyone. But mainly I talked about supporting other artists, because I feel like from a networking perspective, even if you don't see any benefit, like you don't have to do it because it's going to benefit you. But in some way, in some indirect fashion, it definitely will benefit you whether people support you or not. But just linking with people who you think are amazing and telling them that you're their fan and all that stuff, only good can come from those things. And I think that people, you're right, they're very territorial about it. And everybody wants to compare and, like, have a piss and match and stuff like that. But nothing good can come from that. Like, nothing good ever comes from that level of competition. But it only comes from unity, and I feel like if you support everybody else, then I mean it's just positive all around. Even if they never support you, even if that never comes back for you, only positive will come from it.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's what we refer to as a tribe. You know, we always tell everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you get people around you that you trust and that you can help lift each other up, because it does take a tribe to succeed, you know, in the starving artist world. And we need to lift each other up. What did we say here a few weeks ago? It's the collaborator. We are collaborators, not...
Collaborators, not competitors. Yeah.
Not competitors, yes.
That's what Sally Ann Monte said. Yeah, she's awesome.
Sally Ann Monte,
Shout out to her.
Great quote.
Yeah, they're having a big conference in Pittsburgh right now, so I know she's busy.
My mentor Lee Kuyper, he always says that, you know, if you're the first person to succeed, if you are the first person in your group that succeeds, then it is your duty to send the elevator back down for somebody else and bring them back up. And then he always says that, you know, the only time you should look down on somebody is when you're helping to pull them up. And I think all that stuff is so important, you know.
That's awesome. Hey, we have a caller on the line who would like to ask Antonio a question. So let me get the caller on live. All right, caller, you are on the air with Antonio.
Oh, that's amazing, because I miss seeing you when I was home, Antonio. It's Taylor.
Oh, Taylor, I love you.
I have
Taylor's
a question.
Producer on the movie.
Oh.
Very cool.
Hi.
Well,
I have a question because one of the things that I love about Antonio is that he really has not only just a genuine heart, as you all were saying, for everybody in the community, but for getting the next generation ready to step into these footsteps. But one of the questions I have is going through the process we just went through for One Must Fall, what is the best advice you could give to somebody for continuing and not giving up when things start to fall apart with cast and crew?
Oh, that's such a good question. So Taylor, I'll give a bit of background on Taylor first, if that's okay. So she's a producer on the film One Must Fall, but she is, I call her tiny but mighty because she is so strong, you know, and she's, can I cuss on this show?
yes, I do frequently. Yep.
So, we do.
Taylor is my motherfucker. Taylor is my motherfucker. So I love Taylor.
Yes.
So basically she'll do anything. She's the hardest worker that I've ever met, and I've got so much respect for Taylor. But so basically the question was, what do you do like when things start to fall apart with cast and crew? And it's really difficult, but you know, and sometimes I don't even really know how to answer that question because, you know, even we, you know, like try to keep things together and make sure it's cohesive. But I think that the best thing that you can do and what I'll learn going forward is that you've got to make the right decisions up front. And it's really hard to make those decisions. But if your gut's telling you not to do something, and there's been projects that I've had people on that I kept them on, even though my gut said, don't do it, you know. I think that you need to let them go early because you can't handle that cancer on your set because the cancer will spread quick. So that's what cancer does.
Mm-hmm.
So basically I think that you've got to kill the cancer before it spreads and do it early and find out early. But I think it's a gift to be able to identify that. And I think even in your personal life, I think that you need to kill the cancer also because you're the CEO of your life. And sometimes you got to go home today and fire some people out of your life. And, you know, there's Steve Harvey said, and I took his advice, I went through and I deleted every single person. I blocked every person who was negative in my phone. Literally, I went down my entire list of contacts and I blocked every single person that's in my phone who I felt was negative or just needed something from me every time they called. And guess what? Whenever my phone rings now, it's only good news, always. You know, so I think that it starts at like a micro level. You have to eliminate that negativity really, really early on, or else it will affect you long term. And if you don't kill the cancer quick, it will spread. So you just got to kill the cancer before it spreads, I think. And if it, even like on, you know, like regular, you know, like even if your movie was a success and everybody was super cool and stuff like that, sometimes you have to address everyone diplomatically. But stern. So like there was a time where we felt like we had a good film and it was in a competition and stuff like that, and there were other filmmakers present in the audience, and I told them straight up, I said, there's going to be films in here where they're not going to be, you know, like the world class or anything like that, but listen, these people have brought their friends and family because they're proud of their film, so do not speak negatively about anybody's film. I don't want to hear nobody from our team speak negatively about anybody's film from our squad. Don't do that.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't. And they get it, you know, because, I mean, people are proud of this stuff. And you don't want to say nothing negative. But, I mean, like, even to that level, I think you have to be a leader and control it. And Taylor and I were able to get in front of that on several occasions, actually, for other projects that we've done. But, you know, you just got to be careful. And perception is everything, and your reputation is everything. And you want to be represented well and positively, even in defeat. You know, sometimes you're not going to win every time. So even in defeat, you have to handle it with grace.
Yeah. Thank you, Taylor, for the call. She dropped on she hung up while you were giving the answer there. So I just want to thank her on the air for the great call. Yeah, I appreciate that very much.
Great.
And I agree.
I mean, people can, you know, really bring you down and you have to stop it, because when you're working on a project on that scale, everybody makes sacrifices. It's blood, sweat, and tears, literally. People just don't understand what all goes on behind
until
the scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an easy process by any means. It is work. It is hard work. And everybody is putting all they got into it because they want to see, you know, themselves succeed and people around them succeed. So when you do get that negativity, you do have to cut it off at the pass because it does spread. It spreads like wildfire. And then that brings the whole project down. You know, mm-hmm. if you have an unhappy cast and they're all grumpy and everything, it's going to show. It is going to show on screen. You know, you've got to keep, you know, people happy. You got to keep that focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's true.
Stay on your game. Stay on your game. Don't let other people bring you down. You know, even if you are an actor per se and you've got other actors around you that are, you know, complaining about this, complaining about that, or, you know, just walk away. Just walk away, man. You know, don't let it get in your ear.
Don't feed it, yeah.
You're there to be a part of this project, and you believed in it or you wouldn't have been a part of it to begin with. So, you
right.
know, do your best and see it out.
Now, we
Absolutely.
Do have a
I'm
question
the same
in the chat room. And,
oh, go ahead.
And, Thomas was asking, and this is something that I'm sure, all filmmakers get when they make indie features, but what was your path on funding your feature? What course did you take to raise whatever, you know, resources you had for that?
That's a really, really great question. I have, like, a really unconventional way of doing it that I think will help anybody who's, you know, on this path and attempting to do this. But we did do Indiegogo, and we raised, like, $13,000 from that, but there was a better way that I think that anybody can get behind and, you know, like they can do themselves that they might not have thought of. So so what I did is I created a business plan for the movie before I made the movie, obviously. And I wrote down everything in the business plan, everything that I would do, how I was going to be productive day one, and what my marketing strategy was, just all of it. And then the budget was my last slide, right? So
mm-hmm.
I asked two of my best friends, the guys who I think have the most business acumen. I just respect them above all, and I asked them, I didn't ask them to read my business plan. I asked them if they would be willing to give me advice because I respect them so much. So I
right.
sent them my business plan, and I said, would you take a look because I respect you so much that if you gave me advice, I think it would help me dramatically. And both of them funded the film, two of them. So two people I sent it to, and both. Now, if I would have asked them
wow.
to read my business plan, if I would have asked them for money, they probably would never would have looked at it. And I didn't
right.
do this by – I did it by accident. But I thought it was like a good teaching opportunity because cause I think that if you go like directly, like it's like taking somebody out on a date and asking like to sleep with them like that day, or like not even, you didn't even go on a date yet. You just met somebody in a bar and you ask to sleep with them right then and there.
Right.
Like it, I think it's just not going to work, you know? So I think that you have to, you just can't ask somebody for money straight up. But I think that if you took that approach and if you knew somebody yourself who was like ultra successful, then you might be surprised that they might give you a hand. But I think that that asking that people so directly for money, I think is not going to work anymore, you know. But I did it by mistake, but it ended up working, and so I figured I'd pass the information along. But I think that anybody can
wow.
try that, and anybody should make a business plan anyways. Just give it a shot
mm-hmm.
and see what happens.
Well, and planning, and you can't plan enough because, I mean, obviously in indie film, I mean, to begin with, I mean, you have to have an ABC plan for things, but you just definitely illustrated, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'm adamant about, and that's planning. It, the more you do, the better your path goes.
That's true.
Oh,
I do have a question.
Yes.
Did you actually then assign someone to be accountable to that handled the budgeting during the film? So say like you say, I got to get $10,000 and then you have somebody say, no, you're going to do with what you got here. We're going to, you know, we can do this, we can do this, we can do this and make it work and save the money. Did you have someone to actually help reel you in?
No, I did everything. So like as far as like the budgeting of the film and the spending and pretty much like hiring every single person, and I did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like with this budget of film, and like we'll just say it's under $10 million, you have to do everything yourself. So
yes,
pretty much anything that that goes on in the film, you're pretty much going to have to handle. And once you start to let go of that responsibility, then you have to have accountability for the people that you are delegating to, because if they make a huge, colossal mistake, you have to own that mistake. So for me, it was just easier to do everything myself, just because I would have full accountability for everything if I did it. So so I think that if anybody's in the situation, they're trying to make a film, you know, be careful to give too much responsibility, because you might find yourself in a situation where, you know, you're taking all the arrows for somebody else's mistake, and you're going to have to, because you're the leader, you know, and you're just going to have to do that. So, so to avoid those pitfalls, I think that you just have to do it yourself, and it's a lot of work, but I think that once you fall, if you fall in love with that work and you're not in love with, oh, Antonio, it was a great movie, or, you know, winner of this film festival, like, if you're in love with the work, then all that other stuff is just extra and it's great. But if you really fall in love with the work and you become passionate about the work, then you'll be very successful. But if you're in love with just the reception of things, you know, like the awards and stuff like that, there's other ways you can get it. You know, you can get that other ways. But if you're just in love with the work, though, then I think you've chosen the right path.
Mm-hmm. Where it's a passion.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Ollie. Now you have the answer. You had a $9.9 million budget. There you go.
I wish. I wish. Lord, that would have helped matters.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I have an add-on question on this. So how close were you on your original budget to what the film actually cost?
Good question.
Very close. That's a great question. So so very, very close. So I did the budget, probably like 50 times or more. But the reason why was because, you know, I had money invested in it as well, and I sold my car for it and everything. But I just thought, because I would, honestly, I'd rather take a cab or an Uber or a TARC places than to, because I would just, my dream was more important than having a car. So I sold my car for it. But I think that, you know, like, we had a couple things happen. Like, people pulled a bait and switch on me. For example, like, somebody was like, well, I'll work for points. And then they didn't. They wouldn't sign the paperwork. And then after the film was done, they were like, well, I need to be paid. And I was like, we'll just take the money and get out of my life. So
been
like
there.
That happened before.
Understand. Understand.
Gotcha.
And then another thing happened where somebody was like, they pulled out on me like a week before the shoot, and they were supposed to be working on things for 10 months, and I already paid them. So that ended up putting me so far over budget because I had to get somebody to come in from another state.
Understand.
And so I ended up like $10,000 over budget because of other people. But, you know, it's honestly, I take full responsibility for it, because I should have been I should have noticed the red flags earlier, sooner.
Yep.
Understand.
That's how we learn. It is how
we
learn.
Someday we're going to sit down.
Yes, Antonio, we need to have a drink
about.
And sit down and have a chat.
I might
let me tell you.
To talk about this topic, but yeah, we will.
We learn the hard way, but we grow
we
from
learn
it.
We learn the hard
and
way.
That's
yep.
what
yep.
that's what makes us better filmmakers. That's what makes us better writers.
Yep.
That's what makes us better creators. You learn the hard way, and the lessons you carry with you, and you can share your stories to help others so they don't get
Morning.
The same situation.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And if
you're
you've
right,
been in
totally
business
right.
for yourself, it's, you know, and you haven't made a mistake, watch out.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Because you have. You just don't realize you have. That's right.
Right.
None of us ever reach perfection. You know, that's
right.
it. Once you think you are perfect, then let me tell you, you need knocked off that perch, because it is not true. You know, once we get that chip on our shoulder, that's it. You know, game over. We have to keep humility. No one is ever perfect.
Right. Well, let's get to a fun question for Antonio. I know that you are, you know, showcasing the film. You're in that phase where you're showcasing the film now, and we're going to be super stoked to be showing that at Imaginarium, of course, and you've got other venues going to be screening it. But what is the game plan, if you can talk about that a little bit, for where you're going to take it after you do the showcasing of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great question. And thank you guys so much for giving me the chance to put it on. I mean, it's a huge honor. And
of course,
it's so much work to do that. And I think that a lot of like filmmakers don't realize how much work goes in on your end to just be able to put that together and to put together the timeline and to get the guests and to get the event, the venue and all that. There's so much
Everybody.
That goes into it. So I'm so thankful to you guys
well, you're
for
welcome.
Doing that
and
for me. And
thank you.
Giving us a platform.
It's insane how much work goes into it.
It is. Every day.
I got a little taste of it, just a tiny taste of it, and that was like just doing one film, and you guys are doing several and several guests and out of town guys and all this. But
and 130 panels and workshops.
Where are you going next after you get done showcasing?
We're in almost 100 film festivals, so 96 film festivals now.
Woo!
And we have we've played like 40, I want to say. I can't remember, something like that so far. But but we're in a bunch of them, and I'm trying to make it to all of them, but it's so expensive for the travel and stuff. You know, it's all right, every single one, but I'm trying my best, you know, but my schedule is a little crazy and stuff too. So, but basically, my plans for distribution are, we've had like a bunch of producers, reps and sales agents and distributors call me already. But like, I really don't want, there's been a lot of filmmakers who I know of who don't own their film anymore, and they actually owe the distribution company a lot of money. And then here's how that happens. So basically what happens is some of these distribution companies will take your film, and then there'll be no marketing cap in the contract. And what that means is they can say that they went to Romania and they were selling your film and they have $10,000 in receipts, and they can prove they went to Romania, they were having these lunches, these dinners with these people. But what they don't tell you is they were doing that same thing for 100 different films in their catalog, and they charge all those films that same money that are all in their catalog, and they end up netting out, you know, and they own all these films. At this point, they do it so much that that they hit you with this bill, and then you don't own your film anymore. You actually owe them money. They ain't even sold your film yet, and they don't have to.
Yeah.
So this happens all the time, so you got to be really, really careful of who you're going with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had some distributors call me. Some were like that. A lot of them, most of them are honest, but some of them are like that. They're just trying to take you because you're new. But what I really want to do is go through the festival circuit and create more festival buzz, so that people are, they want to see the film, and we get, you know, we're getting more recognition and stuff, and whether we win awards or not is irrelevant, but I hope that we do, but just so that people, you know, see that we have an audience, I think is important. And then once they see that, then I think that we'll be worth more. But all the sales agents who've contacted me so far have been like, you won't be worth more if you have a bigger audience. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense, trust me. But that doesn't make any business sense, you know, like if you have, you know, a big audience, then you're going to definitely be worth more. But I got contacted by Jeff Dowd. He's the dude from Big Lebowski contacted us. He owns a company called Blood, Sweat, and Honey, and we considered going with him too. But he's a really, really nice guy. But he's like, I'm the dude. And I'm like, I just didn't understand. And I got off the phone, I researched, and I'm like, oh my God, this is the real Jeff Dowd from Big Lebowski, like the guy the movie's based on. It was super cool. But yeah, so we've had crazy calls lately.
That is fantastic. And that's because you have been shopping it around. You know, you have been going to the festivals and getting the buzz out. And, word of mouth. It's all about networking. That's what we always say. And, you know, you brought that up earlier. Even if you don't think it's going to help you now, it will in the long run. But networking is huge. That is a big,
everything.
Big deal. It is.
It's been everything for me, you know. And just treating everybody with kindness, I think, has really helped me more than anything, because, you never know these days. And, like, I would treat anybody the same no matter what. But I know that, you know, I'm not uneducated. I'm heavily tattooed, and I don't really appear to be anything, you know, and I'm not anything. But you know, people treat me sometimes pretty poorly because of that. And I'm like, that sucks for you because, you know, like, I could help you so much, you know.
Bring so much to the table.
You know, there's it's just sad that like people, you know, they just don't treat everybody with kindness, man. And I think that what has helped me more than anything in the whole world is that I treat everybody the same, and I always treat everybody with respect, no matter what. And that's gotten me further than anything that I can think of, to be honest.
It will, because karma is a real thing. And you will get it back, you know. People could think they can walk around being hateful and being okay, but one day it will catch up. I'll guarantee you.
Catch
up.
I agree.
And you're not going to go anywhere. But and that's one thing that we can control, and we do control, and one thing that we do own 100%, and that is our reputation. And if we can, you know, keep that on the right path, then you're going to do good things.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. Even like on social media, you know, like you can control your reputation there too. And I think that, you know, you're building your brand, and if your name is your brand on social media, and I go to people's website sometime or their Facebook or something,
watch what you
and
say.
Over here just like, yeah, they're bad mouthing everybody. Like that's your brand now, you know, like that's how people identify you now, is you're the guy who's just talking negatively about everybody and just treat it like a billboard, you know, not a diary. You treat Facebook like a diary and like everybody sees it, you know, your friends and family, everybody's seeing this. And you know, you're just people are so negative on there, and even like people who we try to work together or something. If I go to their Facebook and it's branded with negativity, I won't work with them at all. I don't want to be associated with that.
Yeah, that's something that I tell authors all the time, and it's that that your book is not your brand; it's actually you. You're actually selling yourself, essentially. And, I mean, it's you, and you've got to remember that when you're online, especially. And social media, and it's you know, which is a very toxic climate often nowadays, and that's you know, you definitely gotta be careful and make sure that you put your best foot forward.
Try not to get sucked in.
Oh, I agree.
I always try to share at least a couple positive messages a day, even if I'm not feeling it. I know earlier
you can share
positive,
and somebody will still be offended.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I still get jumped on here and there. It doesn't matter, but you know, hey, at least maybe I got through to somebody.
You know what's really cool though is you know, when we grew up, and I grew up like in the 80s and 90s, but when we grew up. There's no proof of all the dumb shit that we did, thank God. But the people growing
thank
up now, I feel bad for them.
Woo!
That's true. That's very true. Oh, man. Yes. Yeah, you got to be careful. Yeah, you're definitely with social media. That's a beast of its own today.
That's so true, man.
Yes, like now, if you have to think about putting it on there, don't. Just don't do it. Don't do it. and it's the nature of the beast for creatives. I'm sorry, but we have to stay on social media, or your thing is over. Your jig is up. You know what I mean? That don't mean you have to share every single detail of your life and everything that's going on and your bathroom visits and all that. It means, you know, to share positivity and talk about your projects, or, you know, talk about your accomplishments, or, you know, stuff like that, and networking, you know, chatting it up with other buddies. And I will say, if it wasn't for Facebook Messenger, I'd just be lost. It would take me 10 times longer than what it does, you know, because I'd have to be doing everything in email when I could just do it in Facebook Messenger. It's so simple. It's right there.
Yeah, I agree. It's so true. We're blessed with technology today, and I've met some people that I never thought would be possible. I met Andre Overdahl, who he directed the new Scary Stories movie with Guillermo del Toro, and I followed him like 10 years ago when he did a movie called Troll Hunter, because I love Norwegian cinema a whole lot.
I love that movie.
And I can't
love that.
It's so good.
He does.
It's amazing. But so he's amazing. So like when I saw that, I was like, I was so blown away. Yeah, and so basically he came over to the States and he did the autopsy of Jane Doe, and it blew up. You know, it's on Netflix. It's amazing. It's really good. And then the very next thing he did was Scary Stories. And the other day, about like a couple weeks ago, he was like, yo, man, can I see One Must Fall? And I'm like, yeah, let me send you a copy of it, you know. So I sent him a copy of the film, and he might not have gotten it yet. I sent it to Norway. He doesn't know this yet because he might not have got it just yet. But I wrote him like a handwritten note, and I'm like, yo, man, you want to jump on as a producer on my next film? We'll see what he says. I'll try to shoot my shot, you know?
Well, heck yeah.
Absolutely.
As I said, now we are in contact with – I mean, when we were kids, could you imagine? I had a pen pal from France, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And swear to God, his name was Pierre. But I swear to God, that was his name. But my last name is Philippe, you know, and I'm part French, obviously. So I thought that was the coolest thing. But now it's like we can talk to anybody. And whether they respond or not, you can still reach out to them. We have the capability. Yep. I mean, within seconds, it's there. You don't have to put a stamp on it.
Yep.
It's right there. And I speak to people I would have never dreamed I would have got to be friends with or spoke to in my life. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yep.
It actually is. It's amazing. And I know the kids now, they take it for granted and all this because it's all they've been brought up with, disease and all that. They don't understand. But to us, it's just a blessing in disguise.
I agree. Same. That's how I got Lloyd Kaufman in my movie, you know. He's been my idol since I've been a little kid. He shot the movie Rocky,
awesome.
And he was assistant director on Rocky, and he's like, he's a legend. And
I just asked him,
you know, and I started talking to him, and he mentored me for the better part of 3 years, and he's just a great, great guy. And because of social media, I wouldn't have had that opportunity ever. And I'll just shoot my shot, like, to meet these guys, like these greats. I'll just reach out to them, you know, and I think that, like I said once before, they might reach back out. They're going to go look at your, that's the first thing they're going to do is look at your profile and look at your website and stuff, and, you know, it's negativity on there, trust me, they're not going to reply, you know.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That is the truth, because we do that. I mean, even when we get a guest or anything we got come to Imaginarium or stuff, we go trolling. I ain't going to lie. I go trolling because I want to see what kind of person is this I'm dealing with, you know, before I ever even step into it, because I'm genuine. You take me like I am. Daniel and Steven could both tell you I am me. And if you don't like me, I don't really care. But that's just who I am. And if you want an honest opinion, I will give it to you. So if you don't want an honest opinion, don't ask me, because I will tell you my honest opinion. And I want people to be genuine with me, and I think that we all need to be that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
You don't need to
be aggressive. But you still let me be around, so, you know.
Because I love you, Daniel. You're my bestie for the rest of you.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is too funny. Love this. And so, on Troll Hunter, though, Antonio, when you're in the woods, make sure you take your strobe light. If you run into one of those big Jotunars, you can stop it.
really. Yeah, I love that movie. Like, the guy is amazing. He's a brilliant director.
Oh, God.
And writer.
Yeah, Lloyd Kaufman. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned so many things that I just love there, because I've had the opportunity and honor to meet him a few times. Not obviously you having him as a mentor, that's amazing. But, he away from the crowds, I mean, he just has such a nice – grandfatherly like vibe. I mean, he's so personal and nice, and he's a total showman in front of folks. I mean, and I don't think people often get to see that side of him, the really personal side. And that's awesome that he's one of your mentors. And you've mentioned that, and that's something I want to key in on. You've mentioned mentors. You have more than one mentor, because mentorship, I think, is extremely important for creatives on their paths. And you have given us a few examples of that and how they've, you know, helped you. And that's something we want to emphasize in the show.
I think that's so important. And I think that a lot of people who are listening in right now, they might not realize it, but they might be somebody else's mentor. So, and even if you don't think it, and you'll never feel good enough, you know, because it's you and you're never going to feel good enough. You're always going to feel like a fraud and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But you might be somebody's mentor, and I hope that people don't take that lightly, because it's the most beautiful thing in the world to be able to give that somebody their dream and help them, you know, with their passion, and just always know that you might be somebody's mentor as well.
That's true. That is very true. And of course, we're all going to have bad days, and we're going to have good days, because we're human, and a creative own worst critic as themselves. However, you do have to try to, keep your head above the water and just keep persistent. Persistence does pay off in the long run. If you look at all the self-made filmmakers, authors, artists, what have you, they've had a rough road to pave. You know, they've had ups, they've had downs, but they stayed with it. And success is staying with it.
Yeah, agree completely.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you do things you don't want to do, but you do it, and you keep trucking on because, you know, you see that light at the end of the tunnel. And that's what we're all striving for. Mm-hmm. None of us want to be trillionaires, we just want to make a living doing what we love, and that's all we ask.
You keep telling me I can't go toward the light, though.
No, not yet. You're only 200. You cannot go
yet.
You're
only 200 years old, so.
Yeah. Not yet. I had to die and come back, so no.
Yes.
Daniel,
yeah, you're always telling
Victorian
me
Arizona.
That I can't go toward the light. Yeah. So.
No, nope. I plan to avoid it.
That's
Turn
right.
Either way.
Yeah, we so you know, Antonio, Daniel is our very own Jack the Ripper and is in fact 200 years old and lived in the Victorian age. And once
okay.
you meet him,
yeah,
you'll understand.
Awesome.
You will understand.
Yeah, I can't wait to meet you, man.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah, you
fan.
Will love to meet him.
Yeah.
And I am from the Victorian era, but I had to croak and then come back and yeah. But Daniel's just been here. He never left. Daniel's
yeah.
just been here.
Oh, that's incredible.
That's too funny. Too funny. Oh man. Well, while we are, like I said, we got about 4.5 minutes left. I want to make sure that we cover everything that Antonio is wanting to cover tonight, and then B. Give the listeners to listening live a way to find you online so they can, follow your path.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Usually I won't plug myself. I'll just plug like, somebody else who I think is amazing. So there's my friend Josh Stifter is an animator and he was on the show Rebel Without a Crew and he's amazing. You guys should check him out. If you want to learn anything about filmmaking, the guy, he does it all. Michelle Iantuanu, she lives in South Carolina, Charleston. And she is amazing. She made a movie called Live Scream and she's making a movie called Seventh Sense right now. And it's making its way around the festival circuit. She is off the charts. Amazing. Highly respect her. Jason Zink. He just did a film called Straight Edge Kegger, and it's playing with me everywhere, and it's really, really good. And then lastly, Tony Wash. I probably got a million more to mention, but Tony Wash, he helps filmmakers all over the world, and he's really, really good himself, and he just made a movie called High on the Hog and Skeletons in the Closet. With one of them has Sid Haig in it, and the guy is just amazing, and he does a lot for filmmakers all over the world. So don't follow me. Look for those guys because they're amazing. But if you need anything anytime, I will always help you in any possible way that I can because I love helping people. So anybody can reach out to me anytime. Oh, lastly, one of my best friends, Alex Ferrari, runs Indie Film Hustle, and he's got something really big coming for you soon that he's going to help filmmakers all over the world. And he's just the greatest guy in the whole world too. But Alex Ferrari, Indie Film Hustle. But yeah. You guys can get a hold of me anyway. Smoke signal, text message, Snapchat, whatever. No, actually, I don't even use Snapchat. But anyway, you want to get a hold of me, and
what is your main web address?
It's AntonioPantoja.com, and I think the spelling should be on the title of this show. But just AntonioPantoja.com. You can find me on any of the mm-hmm. socials that way. And if anybody needs anything, including gear, I am willing to help in any way that I possibly can. So what's mine is yours. It actually belongs to you. It just lives at my house currently. So you can have anything you want. And if you need help, I'm always here to help.
Well, all I need is a glass of bourbon. So I'm pretty easy maintenance. So no worries there.
Bless you. Bless you, Antonio.
Oh, thank you.
Is there anything that we have not covered that that you're wanting to highlight tonight so far?
No. I just have one thing left to say, if that's okay. I think that, film and being creative and photos or whatever it is that you do, writing, it really brings people together, and I think that's so beautiful that happens. And I think that with me, I didn't really believe in myself until somebody gave me their acceptance and their approval, and they believed in me more than I believed in myself. So I think that sometimes, that's all it takes is just one person believing in you. So if you see somebody, who's struggling in their journey and they really need some help, maybe it'd be really, really cool of you if you could just tell them that, you believe in them. And sometimes that's all it takes, just keep that in mind. If that's if there's somebody out there listening and you think that's them, then maybe reach out to them, tell them, that you believe
Very
in them.
Very cool.
That's beautiful.
That is awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That fits our vibe perfectly. Yeah, we're definitely all about that for sure.
You have been a wonderful guest, and we must have you back sometime.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, thank you.
I wish you all the success and if I don't see you before Imaginarium, then, you know, best wishes. Best wishes.
Oh, it's an honor. It was an honor, and I'm down to go out anytime. So anytime you guys want to, for real, grab a drink, you know, I'm close. So hit me up anytime.
Yep,
I'd be honored.
You're not far.
Fantastic.
You got it, my
Fantastic.
Friend.
Right, yeah, we're in Lex. So
just come on down to the house this weekend. We'll have a few drinks, smoke a couple cigars.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the way to Tennessee.
Yeah.
That's right.
I will be there next week. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys
right.
so much.
You
it was
be.
A huge honor. I'm so thankful for you guys
thank
having
you
me.
So much
if you need anything
us.
Or anybody does. Yep. Thank you so much. Talk soon.
Thank you.
Talk to you.
Thank
soon.
You, Antonio.
And we'll catch everyone else next
right.
week at 9 p.m. Eastern for another exciting Star Chamber show where we spotlight creatives, a show by creatives for creatives. And good night, everybody. And Holly and Daniel sign off.
Good night. See you next week.
Good night. Thank you. Bye-bye.
May everybody have a good week and be creative.